Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey connecting the light. My guest today is Hope Ives Moran. She is an author and we are going to discuss her new book called Be the Second Coming, a guidebook to the embodiment of the Christ within, a personal journey, which is our collective destiny. So welcome to the program, Hope.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Right, now I'm sure everyone like me is always intrigued to know how people start out on their spiritual path, and certainly at some stage, as you have, contact and speak with Yeshua and Mary Magdalene. So perhaps you would like to tell us about that.
Well, the start of my spiritual journey was when I read a book called by Betty Jean Eady called Embracing the Light. Embraced by the Light, excuse me. And it was about a near-death experience, and it opened me up to the idea that perhaps there was much more than meets the eye in this world that we live in. And from that space, I read lots of books and ended up probably 10 years later learning how to communicate with my spirit guides after I had had a reading from a friend who did a channeled reading for me. She said in the reading that I was an artist and that I was psychic, both of which were news to me. And from there, I was able to communicate with my spirit guides, and that journey of opening to the spirit world and the communication that is possible, and most recently in the book, speaking with Yeshua, as you say, is the story that is shared in Be the Second Coming.
Right, so, I mean, how did you ever make your first contact with these two spiritual beings? I mean, did one of them appear to you, or how did it happen?
My friend Martha, who did the channeled reading for me, taught me. She said to just sit quietly, quiet yourself, breathe deeply, just become in a meditative sort of space and sit with a pen and paper and ask, is there anything I need to know right now? And write down absolutely whatever comes into your mind. And I did that at first, and I would get one word, and I did it, you know, continually each day, and I would get a sentence and then a paragraph. And each time the information that came was relevant to me, it was helpful, it guided me in some way. And then one day I got, several paragraphs of information, which ended with the phrase, ask me a question. Hmm. And I said, internally, and this is all happening sort of inside my mind, inside my head, I said, who are you? And I got, I am your guide and teacher. And we started a dialogue after that that has totally changed my life and my world and how I see and perceive things. It's been an amazing awakening, and it's been something that I've wished to share with other people, because it is so mind-expanding. It brings such depth and such amazing grace and sort of sacredness into life in many ways.
Right. So how long ago did that commence?
That was in 1998.
Right. So had you been taking messages for quite some years and keeping them before you started to write the book?
Well, it's interesting because the book starts in with telling a story that occurred very shortly thereafter. I was very open and very willing as I learned to communicate with my guides, and they basically trained me that there was a greater capability within me or through me. And so they trained me to for instance, balance the energies of the earth in a specific place. And the story of that I tell in the first part of the book. So right after, you know, that communication in 1998, shortly, the, you know, probably 3-4 months later in 1999, I was brought to what happened in the beginning of Be the Second Coming, the story that I share there.
Right. Now, you say that the book also offers insight into what is happening on the earth now that supports our embodiment of the Christ. So what is your understanding of what is happening, and why is it important that we find our way to the Christ consciousness level?
That's a big question. And the earth right now is, I mean, I think most people would agree, it's in rather an awkward place in time. There's so much going on the earth right now that seems to be out of harmony, somewhat chaotic. There are difficulties environmentally, socially, culturally, governments, financial systems. Everything seems to be in some kind of pressurized condition. And I couldn't say particularly if it's as a result of what is happening on the earth. There are many timelines on the earth that are changing over now. I'm no expert on it, but there are 1,000-year cycles and, you know, million-year cycles and 2,500-year cycles all coming into changeover right now. You're probably more of an expert on all that than I am. So there is definitely a transition that is occurring on Earth, and there's a maturation of the human family in the way humanity is on Earth. We have sort of fulfilled what we are, sort of we've come to the end of the road in many ways of seeing the Earth as simply a physical structure and each other as simply isolated physical beings upon the Earth. And what is being offered and asked of us now is to see beyond just the physical, see into the non-physical, the energetic, the interrelatedness that is present whether we're aware of it or not, because the true Earth is that unified physical and non-physical event. The true Earth is not just, you know, what we see in physical form. The true Earth is both the physical, the non-physical, and the relatedness of everything upon it. And not only relatedness, but, you know, the communication that is available between all things on the earth is a reality that is becoming increasingly available, I believe. I've experienced for myself in the past several months and years sort of an evolution of an increasing ability to see and feel more than what meets the eye in things. And I think the opportunity that is being offered on Earth right now, the transition that I mention, is where humanity is being supported by the Earth herself and by the energetic evolution of life on Earth to see a much deeper picture of reality. And in embracing a deeper definition of who each and every one of us is, we make that more available to ourselves, and thus the opportunity to express it through our lives becomes a greater reality.
Right. Now, towards the end of your book, there is a reference to the earth changing, and it's spoken of in terms of meaning a rebirth. What is your understanding of that?
A rebirth. Well, when a door closes, a door opens, and I guess it's sort of that perspective that if there is a time on Earth now, this year, in the years to come, when we are in a transition period where old systems, old structures based only on, for example, hierarchy, dominance, and competition, structures based on those ways of relationship on Earth will no longer be supported as we become aware of a greater reality where the new Earth that we might leave behind, that hierarchy and that dominance and that competition, to be reborn into onto an Earth where there is cooperation, co-creation, interrelationship, responsibility for a greater sense of each of us would have perhaps a sense of who we were as a much greater being or self than just the individual body that we walk around in. We would realize the impact of our actions, our thoughts, our words upon others, upon the very Earth herself, and thus change how we do business on Earth, how life happens on Earth, is what is being, I think, presented to us. There are so many spiritual teachers and spiritual ideas and ideas about this rebirth, transformation, the end of the Mayan calendar, you know, what happens after this. And that's essentially my perspective. It is an opening to an entirely new way, a rebirth of how we as humans live on Earth.
Yes. Well, that was very well put. I totally agree with you there. In fact, I think in your book there is something of an emphasis on asking people to see that all is one. Now, people might find that a difficult thing to take on board. How would they approach that?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question, because that's a real gateway to embracing this other definition of self, this actually more true definition of who we all are. The way that I describe in the book is to take something that you're sitting in front of right now and look at it. And look at it in its physical form, but then look into the true depth of its molecular structure. And if you were to imagine that you could see the tiniest particles that are in this item, there would be space and there would be movement. And the space that is in that item in front of you at the tiniest level is the same as the space that is within your human body and within everything that exists around us. And with a little bit of, you know, mental calisthenics at first, you can train yourself and practice this and see the unity of what is within this item in front of you and what you are made of yourself. And what I find as I do this, I open to that item in front of me in a way that is very heart-opening and humbling in some way. It makes it so I don't have to hold myself separate any longer. If even this little thing in front of me is part of myself, there is something that is with me as I move through my life. And the practice that is mentioned in the book is to then, you know, if you are successful or feel that you've gotten to some level where you can do this with another physical item, to do it with you know, another, a different kind of item. It might be easiest to do it with, for example, a pet that you have a deep bond with to begin with, and then move on to perhaps, you know, an item of furniture or something that, a houseplant, something that is within your environment. And as you embrace greater and greater masses of seemingly inanimate objects as part of yourself, something changes, and you have an opportunity to embrace a greater definition of who you are. And it is through embracing a greater definition of who you are that this perhaps divine essence or divine presence or Christ within is available or opens to you.
Right. Now, would you say that when one can reach a point where you can understand or accept that all is one, that you are therefore, or should, love every life form as much as you love yourself? And is that then a level of Christ consciousness, or is that what it is?
Well, it seems inevitable that as you define who you are as the things around you, you love them in a way, and love becomes all there is at some level. Love is kind of a word that has so many attachments, it's hard to say that that's the precise word to use. Perhaps the precise word doesn't exist. But there is an embracing and an acceptance. And my understanding from my writing the book was that there are levels of, for example, Christ consciousness or unity consciousness. And the first level would be the intention, the desire, the understanding that this is possible and it is something that I would strive toward. I would desire to live in that way. I would like to be walking around seeing and knowing myself as all that is. That is sort of the first level, the intention level. The next level, and these are, you know, just my delineations. No doubt there are greater subtleties. The second level would be acting from that place. So, you know, you can have glimpses of knowing your unity with all that is and still not take it into the areas of your life where there might be actions that are appropriate that you wouldn't have thought to do before. And then the third level, as, you know, you intend, then you act, the third level would then be the true embodiment of that divine essence, where you are walking around as all that is. All that is walking around as you. And thus, all that is available to you in the way that is spoken of in the Bible. Jesus, Yeshua, was able to walk on water, turn water into wine. Those kinds of seemingly miraculous things become symptoms, I guess you would say, of that full embodiment of Christ consciousness.
Right. I take it from different things you've said to me already and what is written in the book that you have reached a fairly high level of Christ consciousness yourself. Would that be correct?
I wouldn't make any claims.
Come on.
I have moments of feeling this. Well, let me backtrack.
Yes.
The first story in the book speaks of when my guides trained me to balance the energy on the earth and then had me in meditation visit people on the earth in Yugoslavia. as I did that, I was an all-powerful being. I was the Christed energy. I blessed people. I felt the physical results in my human body of what happened as I did that. So I have something to sort of touch into that is a reference point that I can say, oh, yes, that's how it felt for me in those meditations. And that is when I will say quite confidently, I guess, that presence was within me. As I'm walking around in my life every day, I am far from a perfect being. It's not to say I don't strive for greater compassion and holding myself in the unity of everything. Holding myself in unity consciousness, I dip into it and I dip out of it. I choose often what to focus upon. I focus upon that which is positive, that which is a benefit. You know, if something sort of unfortunate happens, I have this sometimes irritating ability to see the good in it. I guess that's the best I can do to answer your question.
Oh, that's very good. Well, I think what you've established there is that you can't say, I have to Christ consciousness, really, unless you've experienced it in those high moments that you've just expressed. So feeling, very high feeling, I guess, of harmony, balance, and love comes with a level of Christ consciousness.
I guess you could say that. One of the things that's a little misleading in what you said is that Christ consciousness, we are divine beings.
Right.
We are divine beings. We are divine beings before we were ever who we are right now and the name we call ourselves. We needn't do anything to become Christ beings. We need only to realize that our unity with all that is for us. The unity of all that is present for us. When we realize that we have never been separated from all that is, our bodies, our minds, our hearts, our lives are not separate from everything in the world and beyond the world. We are part of all that is. Hence, we are that Christ expression. The Christ is the manifestation of everything that is in human form. I guess I should say the definition of the Christ as it's used here is the God expression through the human form. God, all that is, whatever you might use to describe everything.
Right. Now, just a short while back, you mentioned intention. How do we use that and benefit from it?
Intention is, it's like if you get in your car and you have a destination in mind, you're more likely to get there than if you get in your car without a destination in mind. And your life is like that in many ways. So if you have as a conscious intention in your human life to live as the Christ, to embody Christ consciousness, then that is the most powerful thing, according to Yeshua, Jesus, in the book, that is the most powerful thing you can do to embody Christ consciousness from your beginning right now. Because what it does, it enlists all aspects of your guidance, your spirit guides, and other full aspects of yourself to assist you towards that goal.
Right. Okay, now, You also mentioned somewhat earlier about the earth being in chaos, but in the book it's spoken of as being a healthy symptom. So I'm gathering that that is necessary for changes to occur. Was that the intention of what you said there?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, we humans kind of like our comforts and our, you know, patterns and our habits and our ways, and sometimes it takes some kind of chaotic event, which can manifest as a sickness, a disease, a change in the environment, financial, you know, shortfalls. All sorts of things in our external world cause us to look internally and to see more deeply into the life we live and the earth that we live upon. And sometimes we find resources that we wouldn't find otherwise if everything was available to us. So the somewhat chaotic reorganization of energies and systems upon the earth can be a beneficial stimulus, I guess you could say, to assisting us to look inward, to find another way to interpret what is happening on Earth right now.
Right. That was, I asked you about the single word intention. You, if I recall correctly, you have a chapter in the book about surrender. Perhaps you'd like to give us your comments about that.
Yeah. Surrender is something that is necessary in order to allow this greater aspect of the Christ or the divine within us to take charge of our lives in some ways, and I don't want to mislead you. Take charge. There's sort of a partnership that needs to be brought into your life if you embody the Christ consciousness. There needs to be a willingness on the part of your human self to allow this greater divine aspect of who you are to manifest through you. And surrender of your ideas about who you are, number one, the definition of who you are, number two. If I define myself as simply this, you know, sort of human body that I walk around in, and I move through my life using the will and the perception of that isolated person as the decision maker in my life, it's a very different life that is created than if I define myself as all that is and am willing to step aside to a degree and allow this greater divine essence of who I am to be present in my life and to work through me. And surrender, it's the surrender. Right now, much of what powers our decisions and the way we live is our sense of separation, which is, how do I say it? The ego is a powerful sort of force in creating and sustaining our separation on Earth. It defines us as separate from others. It tells us what is safe, what is not safe. And its whole reason for being is to maintain our separation. And what we are asked of in surrender, the step that we need to take is to surrender so that we are no longer using our ego and our own sort of human ideas and beliefs as our master and guide through life. We are using allowing the presence of the greater aspect of ourselves, the Christ presence, to come through us. And that requires us to surrender, the ego, to find where the ego is manifesting in our life, where the ego is holding us from allowing that perception of unity. The ego can manifest as, you know, our wounded self, our child self, our fearful self, all those aspects of ourselves that are like, you know, as we heal on earth, we peel the onion, you know, we peel off layer after layer after layer, and we find, you know, the next wound inside that needs attention, trying to find the purity of who we are without a lot of the behaviors and the difficulties that we create for ourselves, really. And so surrender is that step where we move beyond the ego to aligning with our spirits, essentially, aligning with the divine essence that is within us as our North Star, as our master, as our reference point.
Right. Do you think there is actually a place for the ego when you have reached full consciousness?
Full Christ consciousness?
Yes.
I think there is a place for the ego only in that it holds you in the human body form, but the ego will tag along on your journey, and it's a wonderful chameleon. It will as you find greater expression of the Christ in your life, the ego will come along and say, "Oh, aren't I wonderful?" and sort of coerce it, or is that the right word? Co-opt it. And so the ego, it's very hard to move beyond the ego. And I think what happens as you become more and more familiar with that Christ aspect of yourself, the ego becomes more and more obvious. It's a very tangible feeling in your body when it slips in and sort of drops something into your mind. And it becomes easier at some level to identify it and to choose to step around it. Or what I have found most helpful is to realign with a higher purpose. When I feel my ego come in and say, "Oh, you know, aren't I wonderful?" I consciously sort of come into some kind of alignment and realign with a higher purpose. And that higher purpose for me is the unity of all. And when I step into that sort of perspective within myself, I feel entirely different. And I feel there is a greater authenticity within my actions that previously the ego had managed to sort of steal off with somehow. So does that help clarify?
Yes. Yeah, fine. I think the ego loves to keep us in the comfort zone and keeps reminding us of what we might be giving up and tries to convince us, I think, that we don't want to give it up.
Yes, that would be quite true. Yes.
Right.
Although
now,
I think at some points the ego can assist you on your spiritual journey as you begin, you know, perhaps for the wrong motives, but it can get you started on a path that that will give you the opportunity to awaken to some wonderful, authentic, divine truths that you get a taste for.
I heard someone describe the ego as the lower mind, and that seemed to me to be quite a good way of explaining what the ego is, because when you start to become more your higher mind, obviously the lower mind sort of moves out of position, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's like it can't reach quite so easily anymore. Mm. Yeah.
Right, now, let's just talk about something on the side here that nevertheless is in the book. You had an interesting trip to Sedona. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. The trip to Sedona, it was a conference that I wanted to go to on the Anastasia work, actually. And I would think to go, and I would get very excited about it. And then this question that I couldn't go and I shouldn't go, and it was just too much effort, came into my awareness. And I did this dance back and forth where I'd get excited, and then my energy would escape, and I'd get excited, and my energy would escape. And it was a very unusual pattern for me. And I noticed the pattern, and I thought, well, this is kind of unusual. So the only way I'm going to know what this is if I move forward. So I signed up for the conference, and I bought the airline tickets, and I got this terrible gripping in my belly of tension. And I didn't, know what to do with that. But anyway, I proceeded, and as it became time to pack and go to the airport, I started to feel sick the night before, and I felt terribly sick, and I thought I had to go to the emergency room. And as I was getting in the car to drive myself there, my guide said, get out and lie on the ground. And so I got out and I lay on the ground, and I just shifted into that natural energy and remembered a phrase that my friend Mary had said, that this is only illusion. And I commanded myself to just get into the frequency of the natural world and healing. And I got up fine. And, it sort of progressed and progressed and progressed, where there was this tension kept building. The next morning, I didn't want my driver to come to bring me to the airport, but he did. As we were about to get out of the car, I had, heart palpitations and fast breathing. And I got out anyway and put my suitcase on the conveyor belt. I knew there was no turning back once that had happened. And I was thinking to myself, oh my goodness, if this plane crashes, I am the stupidest person on earth. So anyway, I continued on. I arrived in Phoenix, got in the car, met my friend. We went and drove to Sedona, but I was waiting, waiting for something to happen. I just had this hypervigilance. And the second night we were there, we were at a vegan restaurant that had a room filled with crystals and stones and kind of a lot of energy items. And I was summoned in there by my friend, and I was just sort of walking around, and my guide said, sit down on that rock, which was a Shiva Lingam, which is a long, oblong rock that was mined from the Narmada River. It's a crypto-crystalline quartz substance. So anyway, this rock is lying down there on the floor, and my guides twice said, sit down on it. And I didn't want to sit on it because I felt really awkward, because it was kind of a display and a restaurant, and nobody else was in there, but I did feel awkward. So finally the guide said one more time, sit on it. I sat on it, and immediately I felt an energy move up through my spine and my head, and my friend who was with me used his pendulum to measure the energies and identified them as a counterclockwise motion of movement towards spirit. And so I sat there for an hour unable to move, and just my mind separated from my body, and I was just there. And at various times, what was happening around me would come into my awareness, but I had no will to get up or move on from there. And finally, it was an hour later when I got up, and I stood up finally, but I couldn't move. And I remembered that phrase, this is only illusion. And I started walking back to the car, and it was like I was sloshing around in my body. I was different. Something had changed. I was, my mind had no thoughts in it. It was just sort of flat. And I walked out to the car, and my friend wasn't around, and I just stood there waiting in a very sort of uncharacteristic manner. Well, I got in the car when he came back, and over the next 24 hours, I came back into more of operating within my regular self, but I was different. And I questioned what had happened, what had gone on, was this a good thing, was this a bad thing? And strangely enough, my friend Les, who was in Abu Dhabi, called me to say he had had a vision of me spinning in a counterclockwise way very quickly, and he was told to tell me that things had been taken out of me, but nothing had been put into me, because I was afraid that something was sort of, put into me in some way that was inappropriate. So I had that experience, which I describe in the book as kind of like a spiritual purging, if you will. And the title of that section in the book is trying to understand ego versus guidance, the spiritual guidance of going to this event and the ego's resistance to going to this event. And the ego was somewhat neutralized, lessened in some way. I was less needy after that. I was more steady. And so it gave me something that I had been asking for on my journey. I had been asking for help in transcending my emotionality, my tendencies, my argumentativeness, all those aspects of myself that I didn't like about myself. And it helped me in many ways. So the reason I put it in the book was because there are times when the ego perhaps is at odds, giving us signals within our body or in our life or in our mind that our spirit might be, having a tug of war with. And that was, I guess, what you would say, a tug of war between ego and spirit.
Hopefully,
spirit won.
For a minute or two, you've been fading away there. I don't think we probably heard your last few comments.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that better?
Yeah, that is, yeah. Perhaps you better repeat the last few sentences in case, we would have missed them, yes.
Okay. Yes, that ego and spirit, the story was told as an illustration of that dynamic that can occur between your ego's wishes and your higher spiritual calling or your higher spiritual intentions. And the story for me was like a tug of war between my spirit and my ego. And thankfully, because of my willingness to, go ahead and notice this process and move through that discomfort that I felt, I was able to let the spirit win on that one.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful. In a later part in the book, you talk about cleaning up your past. What does it mean and how do you tackle that?
Cleaning up your past. Well, as we go through life, we accumulate ideas about ourselves, ideas about others, and ideas about life. And in order to move into the divine expression of who we are, we need to let those ideas go. We need to allow the perception of the unity of all things determine, redefine those ideas about ourselves, those ideas about the world, and the ideas about life. So it's sort of a whole new definition of of those three aspects of human living. And in cleaning up the past, I guess it would be for many of us identifying, you know, what those are and how they might perhaps limit our movement forward. Because there is an opportunity to step into the unity of all things and step into the Christ that you already are. But it can be difficult if a lot of our ideas stand in the way. A lot of our experiences even stand in the way. So I guess that's what I meant by cleaning up the past.
Right. Now, there's a statement in the book that I really do like. It's not the only one, I must admit, but it was, be the master and not the servant of your mind.
Yeah. Yeah, the mind. One of the things that I've become more comfortable with is not believing what happens in my mind. And I don't think that's something that we're taught. Thinking and thought and the ideas that come into our head are often somehow considered sacrosanct.
Yes.
Did I say that right?
Sacrosanct. That'll do, yes.
And the journey beyond our limited mind, our human mind, our separate mind, demands that we question our thoughts and our minds. So our mind was meant to be a tool for us to use. And one of the ways of, I guess you'd say, training the mind or taming the mind is through meditation, which many traditions recommend, because if we are completely at the mercy of our thoughts and our mind and a very active mind that's jumping around from this idea to that idea, it's very hard to remain open and centered and to hear the divine wisdom, the communication, the guidance that comes to us and through us. So
right.
The mind can be an ally, but we need to train it to be so.
Yes, yes, indeed. Now, I'm sure you get requests similar to what I do, asking you, or rather indicating that people would like to try channeling and asking advice as to how to approach it. What would you say to them?
Well, just as I described earlier, I would suggest that you sit quietly with a pen and paper and, you know, meditate if that's a practice for you, or simply sit quietly for, say, 5 minutes and say to internally, you could say it out loud, but I just say it internally, is there anything I need to know right now? And write it down. And just write it down. Don't evaluate it. Don't say, oh, that's just me. Write it down. Because it feels like you and it is you, but it's also ultimately how your guidance comes through you. And for me, my guides were very much a part of what went on inside my head and my mind and my ideas. So they're very familiar. So don't confuse that familiarity with, you know, oh, that's just me. It is you, but for this exercise, you're kind of separating yourself into your guide and yourself in order to receive written information in a new way, which can be very useful.
Yes.
So sit, open yourself, ask, is there anything I need to know right now, and write it down.
Right.
And if
it would seem from what you seeing from what you said about your own experience that you really need to persevere. Now, Hope, we're getting near the last few minutes. Perhaps you would like to take this opportunity to give our listeners your website address and tell them where the book can be obtained from.
Yes, the book is called Be the Second Coming, Guidebook to the Embodiment of the Christ Within. And my website is hopeivesmoran.com, but that's a little bit more complicated than remembering Be the Second Coming, which also points to that same address. So bethesecondcoming.com should get you there.
All right. Yes, carry on.
It's available in the Kindle versions, you know, the e-versions, as well as in hardcover and a soft cover.
Right. I mean, can it be bought directly through your website?
Yes. Yes, that's the best way to do it. There's a group called sacredspaces.org that also carries it. And but if you go through my website, that's the best way to do it, hopeivesmoran.com. And Moran is spelled M-A-U-R-A-N. Or bethesecondcoming.com.
Right. Have you any short message or comment you would like to end up on? Something perhaps that we might not have touched during our conversation?
That we are all one. That we're all in this together. That there's an opportunity and an awakening happening on Earth and a responsibility that comes with our awareness of that. But the future is going to be a wonderful, amazing, new place for us on this beautiful planet Earth. And awakening within ourselves and awakening as the brotherhood and sisterhood of humanity will be the next great saga for all of us on planet Earth.
Right. Just as a quick question, and hopefully you can give me a quick answer, do you think this all ties in with the end of this year, as called Ascension?
I can't say a whole lot about that. I'm open to whatever happens this year. There's some very powerful energies that I'm feeling are present on Earth this year, and there's a continual escalation as I am observing it. And so what happens in December, I'm eager to be available to.
Right, well, we haven't got very long to go before we find out.
No.
Time seems to be going faster than ever. Anyway, I have to thank you, Hope, for coming onto the program. It's been very interesting talking about your book, which is very readable, and obviously the quality of the messages that come through Yeshua and Mary Magdalene are, as you might say, out of the top drawer. So I strongly recommend it.
Well, thank you so much, Mike. It's been a pleasure to have this conversation with you and all the listeners. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Hope. Well, friends, that was a very interesting interview. Next week, it's subject to confirmation, but I'm hoping to have Philip Coppens, who's just written a book called The Ancient Alien Question. And what he's asking is, did ancient aliens change the course of human history? So if he comes back and we get Philip with us, that should yet again be another very interesting program. So thank you for being with me today. I hope you can make it next week. God bless you all. Thank you.